There are very strict and comprehensive regulations about making any statements which might interfere with the defense of the realm or with public safety. No person other than a servant of His Majesty shall record, publish, or have in his possession any document which is or purports to be information about His Majesty's forces, operations of the armed forces, or anything else which might be useful to an enemy. Power is given to search any persons or any goods entering or leaving the United Kingdom. No British subject may, without permission, voluntarily enter any enemy territory or go on board any vessel or aircraft in the service of a power at war with this country. A government order published last night prohibits all dealings, except with Treasury permission, in securities of which the principal, interest, or dividends are payable in the currencies of Argentina, Belgium, Canada, France, Holland, the Netherlands East Indies, Norway, Sweden, Switzerland, or the United States. Owners of any such securities must make a return of them to the Bank of England within 1 month. They may be transferred only to persons resident in the United Kingdom and only with permission of the Bank of England acting for the Treasury. The British Admiralty has had control of British merchant shipping since midnight on Saturday under the government's emergency powers. Its first orders to merchantmen were to keep out of the Mediterranean and Baltic. Then came a ban on the use of wireless transmitters in British tidal waters, and an instruction that all ships on the high seas are to obey the Admiralty's future orders about wireless. There are also extensive lighting restrictions. In addition, pilotage is compulsory in the Firth of Forth. The Canadian government has assumed control over Canadian merchantmen, and the Naval Control Service will govern the routine and service of Canadian vessels. London underwriters have again increased war risk insurance rates, in some cases by over 100%. The exchange of letters between Herr Hitler and Monsieur Daladier was published early this morning. Herr Hitler's message followed his two interviews with the French ambassador in Berlin. It started by expressing recognition of the horrors of war and repeating that Germany had finally accepted her western frontier and given up all claims to Alsace-Lorraine. But, said Herr Hitler, he could not acknowledge the terms of the Treaty of Versailles in all other fields. He had already solved some of the Versailles problems. As for Poland, he claimed that he had tried to remove the most unreasonable provision of the Versailles Treaty by making an offer to the Polish government. This apparently refers to the demand which he made in a Reichstag speech that Poland should hand over Danzig and give Germany the right to build a motor road across the province of Pomorze. Herr Hitler declared that this offer had shocked the German people, and that no one but himself could have dared to make it. For that reason, he said, the offer could not be repeated. But if Poland had been told to be reasonable, especially by Britain, then Herr Hitler said he was convinced Europe would be enjoying 25 years' peace. Herr Hitler's message then went on to assert that Poland had made ridiculous demands, that an unbearable terrorism had started against the Germans in Poland, and that Danzig was growing more conscious of being at the mercy of a foreign power. It was impossible, Herr Hitler went on, for a nation of honor to renounce nearly 2 million people, and he had therefore raised a clear demand. Danzig and the corridor, he wrote, must return to Germany. The appalling conditions on our eastern frontier must be removed. I see no way, he went on, of being able to persuade Poland, which shields itself from attack under the protection of guarantees to accept a peaceful solution. Monsieur Daladier's letter to Herr Hitler, which was sent on Saturday, declared that the fate of peace rested in Herr Hitler's hands. Herr Hitler could not doubt, said Monsieur Daladier, that France would loyally fulfill its obligations to Poland. But he believed that Poland wanted to live in peace with Germany. Up to this very day, Monsieur Daladier wrote, there exists nothing that need prevent a peaceful solution of the international crisis in honor and dignity for all peoples, provided the same will to peace exists on all sides. Monsieur Daladier concluded that no man of noble sentiments could want to embark on a war of destruction without a last attempt at a peaceful solution between Germany and Poland. And he added that Herr Hitler's will for peace could work for such a last attempt without infringing the German honor in any way. The Netherlands government has ordered full mobilization. Broadcasting to the Dutch people tonight, Queen Wilhelmina said, as long as there is no definite breach, peace need not give way to war. If, despite all efforts, a conflict should break out, then Holland will observe and maintain strict neutrality with regard to all sides, with all her forces and all her means. It was in order to be in a position to do this that the government had taken this extreme measure of mobilization. The American minister at The Hague has advised all American subjects to leave Holland at the earliest possible moment. The Swiss Federal Council this evening decided to bring the entire frontier protection of Switzerland to full complement by 5 a.m. tomorrow. This means the mobilization of almost all classes of reservists in all the frontier regions. Between 80 and 100,000 men will be affected. The British and French ambassadors in Belgium have called on King Leopold to assure him that their governments will respect Belgium's neutrality in conformity with their traditional policy. The ambassadors said that their statements were based on the supposition that Belgian neutrality would be respected by all other powers. The Japanese cabinet resigned today as a result of the conclusion of the Soviet-German pact. Baron Hiranuma, the Prime Minister, tendered his resignation to the Emperor because the cabinet felt responsible for the collapse of the foreign policy which they had been pursuing. Baron Hiranuma declared that the complicated situation arising from the non-aggression pact between Germany and the Soviet Union had compelled Japan to work out an entirely new foreign policy. General Nobuyuki Abe has been given the task of forming a new cabinet, and it is thought unlikely that any of the last cabinet will be retained. General Abe is a former commander-in-chief of the Formosan Army. He retired in 1936 from the post of Supreme War Councillor. The Domai News Agency says that the Italian ambassador in Tokyo today assured the Japanese foreign minister, Mr. Arita, that Italy's attitude towards Japan was not affected by the German-Soviet pact, and that Italy earnestly desired to maintain and increase friendly relations with Japan. Japanese troops began to withdraw last night from the border of British territory on the mainland opposite Hong Kong, which was recently threatened with blockade. They are boarding 8 transports standing off Nam Tu in Taishan Bay. Only skeleton forces are maintained in the border villages. The German consul in Hong Kong today advised Germans to leave. Hong Kong now falls under the operation of the Emergency Powers Defense Act, and by the first notification under the new act, it is unlawful to transfer or mortgage any British ship registered in the colony without the permission of the Board of Trade. The Australian government has taken over control of all overseas exchange transactions, in order to conserve resources in time of war. The Southern Rhodesian Parliament, at a special sitting today, unanimously adopted a motion expressing the unfaltering loyalty and service of the citizens of Southern Rhodesia to the motherland in this honor, in this hour of grave national emergency. All stages of the Emergency Powers Defense Bill were passed before the House adjourned. In British Guiana, the Legislative Council met today and passed bills empowering the governor to call out the police and the militia to protect essential services in an emergency. The governor announced that public safety regulations were being drafted for proclamation and steps would be taken to conserve stocks of food and control prices. The council voted the sum of £5,000 for emergency expenditure. Her Majesty the Queen is returning to London this evening to rejoin the King. She will travel in a special saloon attached to the ordinary train from Perth, arriving at Euston tomorrow morning. The princesses will remain at Balmoral for the present. Special prayers for peace are to be held daily at Westminster Cathedral, which will be open all night until further notice for prayers. The Blessed Sacrament will be exposed daily from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. The submarine Thetis, which sank in Liverpool Bay on June the 1st with the loss of 99 lives, was lifted on this morning's tide and carried 8 miles towards the shore. She will not be cared of strong tides until she is close inshore. The United States submarine Squalus was raised to the surface today. She will be towed 10 miles to a naval dry dock. The evacuation rehearsal, which took place this morning in schools, both here in London and in the provinces, involving a school population of over 1 million, is described by the Ministry of Health as having been markedly successful. In Coventry today, thousands of workmen downed tools and marched in a quiet and orderly manner through the streets of the city to a gigantic anti-Irish demonstration. The inquest on the 5 victims of Friday's bomb outrage was opened today at Coventry City Police Court. 2 more bomb explosions occurred in Liverpool early today. Both were in pillar boxes, and though all the letters were destroyed, no one was injured. At Liverpool Police Court, a young Irishman was remanded in custody in connection with the alleged IRA outrage in Liverpool on Saturday night. In Sweden, the official bank has issued a formal statement that owing to recent developments in the foreign exchange market, the bank had found it necessary to cease fixing the exchange rate on a sterling basis.
Daily routine in Warsaw is normal. Even the streets at night are fully illuminated, although the necessary air raid precautions can be put into operation at any moment. The press shows no sign of expecting extraordinary events, and the population is calm but prepared. Reserves who have been mobilized are already with their regiments. The mobilization was effected with great skill and speed. Even the buying of food supplies to last for some weeks caused no disturbance on the market. Polish shopkeepers who attempted to exploit the situation were arrested, and the word profiteer is posted all over their closed shops. The Netherlands government has ordered general mobilization, and the entire defenses of the country have been placed in charge of the chief of the general staff. All international railway traffic to and from Holland will be suspended from midnight tomorrow. Broadcasting to the people of Holland tonight, Queen Wilhelmina said, "As long as there is no definite breach, peace need not give way to war. If, despite all efforts, a conflict should break out, then Holland will observe and maintain strict neutrality with regard to all sides, with all her forces and all her means. It was in order to be in a position to do this that the government had taken this extreme measure of mobilization. The American minister at The Hague has advised all American subjects to leave Holland at the earliest possible moment. The Swiss Federal Council this evening decided to bring the entire frontier protection of Switzerland to full complement by 5 a.m. tomorrow. This means the mobilization of almost all classes of reservists in all the frontier regions. Between 80 and 100,000 men will be affected. The British and French ambassadors in Belgium have called on King Leopold to assure him that their governments will respect Belgium's neutrality in conformity with their traditional policy. The ambassador said that their statements were based on the supposition that Belgian neutrality would be respected by all other powers. The Belgian Prime Minister, Monsieur Pialot, received the British, French, German, and Italian ambassadors and the Polish minister late this evening. The export of a number of products from Belgium has been forbidden. They include cereals, cocoa beans, cocoa butter, jute thread, jute textiles, spare parts of cars, motorcycles and bicycles, electrical accumulators, tires, leather goods, raw rubber, copper filings, and copper sulfate. In Sweden and Finland, the official banks have decided to cease fixing the exchange rate on a sterling basis because of recent developments in the foreign exchange market. Norway is considering taking similar steps. In Lithuania, a number of classes of reservists were called to the colors this evening, and various precautionary measures are being taken with the object of defending the country's neutrality. The King of Italy has left his holiday seat near the French frontier for an unknown destination. Air raid precautions have been taken throughout the country, and Rome was partially darkened last night. All civil flying over Italy and her possessions, except for regular air services and instructional flights, is prohibited, and Italian air services to France and Poland are suspended. The Italian ambassador in Berlin has had another long talk with Herr Hitler. The Duce has replied to the Canadian Prime Minister's peace appeal by saying that he would leave no effort untried to safeguard the peace of the world, a lasting peace which would be a just peace. The Japanese Domain News Agency says that the Italian ambassador in Tokyo today assured the Japanese foreign minister, Mr. Arita, that Italy's attitude towards Japan was not affected by the German-Soviet pact, and that Italy earnestly desired to maintain and increase friendly relations with Japan. Hong Kong now falls under the operation of the Emergency Powers Defense Act, and by the first notification under the new act, it is unlawful to transfer or mortgage any British ship registered in the colony without the permission of the Board of Trade. The German consul in Hong Kong today advised Germans to leave. The Southern Rhodesian Parliament, at a special sitting today, unanimously adopted a motion expressing the unfaltering loyalty and service of the citizens of Southern Rhodesia to the motherland in this hour of grave national emergency. All stages of the Emergency Powers Defense Bill were passed before the House adjourned. In British Guiana, the Legislative Council met today and passed bills empowering the government to call out the police and the militia to protect essential services in an emergency. The governor announced that public safety regulations were being drafted for proclamation and steps would be taken to conserve stocks of food and control prices. the council voted the sum of £5,000 for emergency expenditure. Her Majesty the Queen tonight left Balmoral to rejoin the King in London. She is travelling in a special saloon attached to the ordinary train from Perth, and she will arrive at Euston tomorrow morning. The princesses will remain at Balmoral for the present. The evacuation rehearsal, which took place this morning in schools both here in London and in the provinces, involving a school population of over 1 million, is described by the Ministry of Health as having been markedly successful. Here is the rest of the news. In Tokyo, General Nobuyuki Abe, former Supreme War Counselor, is engaged in forming a new cabinet to replace Baron Hironuma's ministry, which resigned today because of the conclusion of the Soviet-German pact. The list of the new cabinet will not be ready for presentation to the Emperor before tomorrow morning. Japanese troops began to withdraw last night from the border of British territory on the mainland opposite Hong Kong, which was recently threatened with blockade. Only skeleton forces are maintained in the border villages. The submarine Thetis, which sank in Liverpool Bay on June the 1st with a loss of 99 lives, was lifted on this morning's tide and carried 8 miles towards the shore. She will not be clear of strong tides until she is close inshore. The United States submarine, Squalus, was raised to the surface today. She will be towed 10 miles to a naval dry dock. And that is the end of the news.
Tonight, Mr. Steele gives us his views and a report on the latest happenings on the European political scene. We take you now to London, England.
Good evening. Shall we have 24 or more hours of peace? Britain's answer to Hitler, on which the issue of peace or war will depend, has been delivered. Sir Neville Henderson, Britain's ambassador in the German capital, flew to Berlin this evening and went straight to the Chancellery, where he remained for nearly an hour. That is all we know yet in London, and there seems to be no more news in Berlin. There has been no publication here, either, of Hitler's communication or of the British reply, and perfectly won't be until Chamberlain meets Parliament tomorrow. All this was after a third cabinet meeting devoted exclusively to Hitler's message, which lasted for just short of an hour this noon. After that, Sir Neville was closeted with the Prime Minister and Lord Halifax, the Foreign Secretary, for nearly 4 hours. London, Berlin, Paris, and in fact all Europe, are waiting in tense expectation for Hitler's reply, for while nothing has been allowed to leak about the contents of the British note, it has been allowed to become known that Downing Street regards it as requiring a further communication from Hitler. That, the political experts declare, puts off the 0 hour until midnight tomorrow at least. We in Britain have not even been allowed to learn what was in the communication which Sir Neville brought from Hitler, except the semi-official indication that it's not quite the same as the note to Daladier, the French Prime Minister, but is devoted rather to points of issue between Germany and Britain. It's also said that it's couched in a much calmer and more conciliatory vein than any of his recent utterances. I think I can say, therefore, that while the atmosphere is notably tenser in London today than it has been, there is still moderate hope of a postponement of hostilities and perhaps of discussion in a healthier atmosphere. But of course, this is all conjecture and based on an effort, as I said last night, to predict the workings of an unpredictable mind. Meanwhile, Britain is taking no chances, and the moves which have taken place today have brought home to the people the imminence of war. Parliament has been summoned to meet tomorrow. There will be only a short session, and will be devoted entirely to a report from Mr. Chamberlain on the situation and short speeches by the leaders of the Labour and Liberal oppositions. It can safely be predicted that they will pledge unstinted support to the government, come what may. The government today issued the first 100 orders under the Emergency Powers Defence Act, which was passed at Parliament's last sitting in one day. They cover nearly every conceivable measure of safety, from lighting restrictions to the possession and care of carrier pigeons. Billeting powers are taken for both troops and civilians, and property can be taken over by the government. Mail may be examined, and no codes or other means of secret communication may be used without special permission, and so on. Nothing, seemingly, that's essential to defense in wartime has been forgotten. The orders have merely been published and are not yet in effect. They can be put in effect at a moment's notice by proclamation. The Admiralty has closed the Mediterranean to British shipping. No ships can enter it at either end. Must stop until further orders at Gibraltar or Aden. Ships already in the Mediterranean are ordered to proceed on their voyages and get out of it as quickly as possible. Other ominous signs are the cancellation of the German liner Europa's call at Southampton, which was so positively announced yesterday. She also cut out Cherbourg and carried on about 50 British and French passengers to Hamburg. British lines to Australia have also cancelled their sailings, but that's because of the closing of the Mediterranean. The Queen Mary, it's announced, will sail on Wednesday as usual for New York, but the Canadian liner Duchess of Bedford has cancelled her sailing. All night air service between London and Paris have been cancelled, but the day services have been increased. This is because the airports will be in darkness at night. Children in 900 London schools went through their evacuation drill this morning, and they have, much to their dismay, been ordered to resume daily attendance, although vacations have still a short time to run. All these measures are, of course, purely precautionary, but they have brought home to the people what may happen and sobered them accordingly. Don't think, however, that there's any panic. Britain's going about its business and pleasure as usual. Today, many big cricket matches were played, and far more time was taken on the British radio to describe them than was given to the international situation. Other measures contemplated, but not yet announced, would be the closing for a time at least of all theaters, movie houses, and sports grounds to prevent the assemblage of large numbers of people, a moratorium on all debts, including mortgage interest and installment purchase agreements. The Queen set a good example to her women subjects by coming back today from Scotland to Buckingham Palace, where she joined her husband. The Duchess of Kent has returned from Yugoslavia, and the whole royal family, with the exception of the Duke of Windsor, are now in Britain. He, it is reported, is anxious to come back and take up some war work if war should break out. Reports from Berlin indicate at least an equal tension there, but among the people, incredulity that war will result. The German people are still convinced that their Führer can pull off what he wants without war. He has always done it before, they argue, so why not this time? As befits an autocracy, there's less gossip and rumor about the government's plans. But what there is all leans the same way, that Hitler will at the last moment make some conciliatory move and avoid war. Reports received here in government circles are that he is astonished at the failure of the German-Russian alliance to put the wind up the British people, to use a bit of British slang, and bitterly disappointed at the reaction in Italy and Japan. It now seems that Japan has definitely lost to the famous anti-Comintern pact, and today we learn that Italy has told Japan that no matter what has happened, she determined to preserve her friendship. That is taken in London as an indication that Mussolini is bringing pressure to bear on his Berlin partner, and may even be getting ready to break the axis. There are strong rumors in London that he has told Hitler that if he does insist on war, Italy will be neutral. That must be an ominous piece of news for Germany. Before the Great War, Italy was a member of a three-power military alliance with Germany and Austria. But when war came, she refused to march and preserved her neutrality. And eventually, after an agitation for which Mussolini was largely responsible, joined the Allies. It's dangerous to risk too much on history repeating itself, but it often does, and this is one of the times when the repetition is indicated. To get back for a moment to Germany, it's announced officially that our war preparations were completed at 10 o'clock this morning. Rigid food rationing has been introduced, and housewives are trying to lay in stocks, but without much success. But my friend Sigrid Schultz, who is following me immediately, speaking from Berlin, will doubtless be able to tell you more about that. Anyhow, what we hear here is that the ration is 25 ounces of meat a week, 15¾ ounces of fat, including oil and butter, and 2½ pints of milk per person. Other articles are rationed on a similar scale. Such a conservation of supplies did not become necessary in the Great War until it was nearly over. Japan's defection is regarded in London as of the utmost importance. The new cabinet is said to favor a resumption of good relations with Britain, and there's even hope here that the alliance of the Great War may be restored. Japanese soldiers in China are now notably polite to Britons and have begun to slap the faces of Germans, who have been advised by their government to leave Japan and China. So far, there are no reports of the sport of debagging being extended to Germans, but that may come. Seriously, however, if Japan is even neutralized, It means an immense access of strength to the Western powers, for it saves Britain the necessity of sending a fleet to the Far East, and it ought to have the effect of offsetting some of the help that Russia might have been disposed to give to Germany. That helps, however, a bit problematical. Voroshilov, the Russian commander-in-chief, has stated publicly that the reason Russia signed up with Germany was Poland's refusal to allow Russian troops to cross her territory to get after Germany. Then, with perhaps unconscious cynicism, he declared that he saw no reason why Russia should not help both sides in the threatened war with supplies. That he declared was a commercial and not a military matter. If the German people have been allowed to read this statement, I wonder how they're feeling about the new ally who has lost them the support of such powerful partners as Italy and Japan. Well, we'll soon know what Europe's fate is going to be. The present tension can't last much longer. Not more than a day or two, I should say. Hitler has declared that his patience is exhausted. So is that of France and Britain. We shall see which is stronger in the battle of nerves and wills. From all the evidence available here, the preponderance seems to lie with the democratic power. Thank you and good night.
We have presented a broadcast by John Steele, who spoke to you direct from London, England. Mr. Steele's next broadcast will be presented over most of these stations tomorrow evening at 7:30 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time. We take you to Berlin, Germany, for a report from Sigrid Schultz.
Hello, Mutual Broadcasting Company. Hello, Mutual Broadcasting Company. This is Sigrid Schultz, the Berlin correspondent of the Chicago Tribune, speaking from Berlin. In the same hotel where 6 and 8 years ago members of the international press used to assemble to talk with the leader of an important political party of Germany by the name of Adolf Hitler, they assembled again tonight to wait for the outcome of a historic meeting between this same Adolf Hitler, the absolute master of Germany today, and the emissary of the British Empire, the British ambassador to Berlin, Sir Neville Henderson. All day long, there had only been two topics of conversation. When does Henderson arrive in Germany? And how big were the rations of food you managed to get from your grocer and dairy man? Yesterday, yes, it was Sunday, the crowds opposite the Chancellery were dense. Today, though this is a historic day and the Germans knew it, we were much thinner. Many of the usual sensation seekers were out seeing where they could get some extra reserves before everything is rationed. In the Chancellery, activities had been carried on as usual. When we passed there this noon, we caught glimpses of generals and admirals reporting to Adolf Hitler, the supreme commander of all Germany's armed forces. General von Reichenau, chief expert in military motorization, slipped in with his monocle stuck into his eye at just the right angle. Hitler's personal adjutant, Schultz, his minister in the Chancellery, Dr. Lammers, nearly passed by unnoticed, or to be accurate, unrecognized. They were wearing the field gray of the German army instead of the uniforms in which one is accustomed to see them. The protector of Germany's new conquered provinces, Aron von Neurath, arrived, as usual, a stately figure. The crowd cheered him. Some got their courage up and asked, "Will we manage it once more, Mr. Minister?" Neurath merely smiled indulgently and moved on. The crowd continued its guessing and its discussions about the problem of whether or not Hitler could enforce the return of Danzig to the Reich without bloodshed. Women and young girls listened feverishly, watching the scene. Quite a lot killed over, to a great extent, out of excitement. Red Cross nurses provided them with a glass of water and a few flattening pills, and the girls went on. Some decided it would be wiser to go home. The climax of the day was reached tonight when, in the bright floodlights of the Wilhelmplatz, the car of the British ambassador rolled up to the heavy brass doors of the Chancellery. In the court of honor, the guards of honor presented arms, and Sir Neville Henderson, trying to look as unconcerned as your blasé English gentleman should, walked up to the Chancellery with a British message, on which everybody in Berlin believed the immediate future of Europe depends. He was received by Hitler in the presence of Hitler's foreign minister, Herr von Ribbentrop. The conversation lasted for almost an hour and a half. The longer it lasted, the more pleased the German officials waiting in the historic hotel across the street where the press became. Occasionally, one or the other of them would slip out across the street and get in touch with something hidden in the vastness of the chancery or possibly in one of the ministries nearby. Every time they came back from their mysterious calls, I would claim to be more satisfied with the outlook. They would say, a door has been left open for negotiations. That was the press report. Then they would have another glass of beer, another leg of the roast partridge that has just come into season, a few more spoonfuls of sauerkraut with pineapple and mashed potatoes, and another would come in and report what he had gleaned. He would say, the way things are going, we think we can now look forward to the proclamation of the union between the Danzig and Germany in a very short time, maybe tomorrow. Later in the evening, after the official bulletin about Sir Neville Henderson's visit to Herr Hitler became known, it was learned that the Germans found the, what they called, oral statements of Sir Neville Henderson made it quite clear that there is some possibility to negotiate. Germans, whom I have found to be very well informed in quite a number of years, declared that in the course of the conversation, Hitler immediately answered some of the questions presented to him by Henderson for Mr. Chamberlain. Rumor had it that Sir Neville Henderson himself would immediately fly back to Hitler to London with Hitler's answers, but this was found to be untrue. The representative of the British government, Mr. Boyle, who had arrived with a British ambassador, intends to fly back to London early tomorrow morning in the same government plane in which he and Henderson arrived. This will enable him to give the answers of Herr Hitler to Chamberlain, who can then use them as basis of talks in the British chamber. And again, negotiations can be resumed. A further cause for optimism in the eyes of the Germans tonight is what they call the abating of the acts of Polish terrorists against the German population in Poland today. This, they believe, indicates that the Poles are trying to prepare the atmosphere for negotiations with the Germans. In the burning restaurants and coffee houses, rumors were flying round that the Polish Foreign Minister Beck would be coming to Berlin tomorrow or in the very near future. This rumor lacks foundations, but they show how optimistic the masses are. Only the women were less optimistic. They rushed to their groceries and their dairymen early this morning with their brand new ration cards. They found that of the 2 ounces of coffee which they are allowed per head of the family, 2/3 are for coffee substitutes. If you know how fond the German Hausfrau is of her coffee, you will realize she was definitely worried. Despite the shopping fever, most men were busy discussing the international situation, and you could hear many forecasts about the tremendous role Russia, the Soviets, would soon play in Central Europe, both from an economic and a political viewpoint, as well as a military viewpoint. While others, who are close to England, declare most emphatically that negotiations for a wider economic cooperation between England and Germany progress so far that when the friction due to Poland stops, a big business boom should be expected for all concerned. France figures less prominently in the discussions, despite the publication of Mr. Daladier's and Herr Hitler's letters. But tonight, official quarters were quite worried about a statement issued by the official news agency in France. They feared that Hitler might resent some of its contents. But this worry was not taken seriously. Now I return you to America.
We are now transmitting our latest news in English. The British ambassador to Berlin, Sir Neville Henderson, left London by air this afternoon and arrived in the Reich capital at 8:30 p.m. Central European Time. He was received by the Führer and Reich Chancellor at the new Chancery building at 10:30 p.m. The German Monday night press leaves no doubt as to the seriousness of the present international situation. Europe has entered today upon the most dangerous week of the whole post-war period, says the Hamburger Fremdenblatt. The letters exchanged between the Führer and Daladier fully explain the diplomatic situation and all sides of the German standpoint. The French people will hardly escape the deep impression which this correspondence must make upon every sincere man, writes the Völkische Beobachter. If, nevertheless, France continues her encirclement policy, then everybody should know that it is inspired by entirely different motives. At any rate, France will be aware that she is dealing with a united and strong nation which is determined to fight for its rights if necessary. New reports have been received telling of Polish terrorist actions in the German Reich border territory. An attack on the railway station at Altkirch and the adjacent sawmills was repulsed by the boundary patrol. A forester's lodge at Dietrichswalde and several farms in Rosenberg County were burned to the ground by the Poles. Several farms owned by German nationals in the counties of Neustadt and Lauenburg likewise fell prey to Polish incendiary bombs. The town of Waldstein in the corridor was evacuated on Sunday by the civilian population. The Polish authorities have established a concentration camp for 30,000 German nationals in the vicinity of Brest-Litovsk. The sanitary conditions in camps of this type defy description. The Poles have openly declared their intention of destroying the Germans by plagues. And indeed, an epidemic of dysentery broke out in a camp in central Poland. The epidemic has already claimed many lives. An American journalist at present in East Upper Silesia stated to a representative of an Upper Silesian newspaper that the terrorism stories are only too true. Conditions there are horrible, he declared. Reports continue to pour in concerning the terrorism of the Poles against the Czechs and are increasing the feeling of resentment felt by the Czechs towards their so-called Slavic brothers. The Prague press recalls the despicable attitude of the Poles last autumn and expresses the deepest disdain for the Polish claim to racial connection. During several Slovakian mass meetings, leading politicians repeatedly affirmed the loyalty of Slovakia to the German people in this crisis. Prime Minister Tiso, in speaking before 30,000 people, stated that Slovakia would march shoulder to shoulder with Germany. According to Riga reports, Polish soldiers have been escaping into Latvia during the last few days with full equipment across the Latvian-Polish frontier. The number of the deserters has not yet been ascertained. Official Hungarian quarters deny vigorously the report of a foreign newspaper to the effect that Hungary had asked for British protection in the event of the German army marching through Hungarian territory. The Hungarian minister in London called on Lord Halifax on Sunday night merely to exchange information and was not instructed to convey any wishes or advices whatsoever of the Hungarian government to the Foreign Office. A report by the French news agency Avas to the effect that French fishing boats had been searched by German warships in the North Sea is described by German official quarters as a pure fabrication. Commenting upon the international situation, the Italian press emphasizes once more that the final decision for war or peace depends on England's attitude. The Giornale d'Italia says that Germany adhered to her just claims with the full support of Italy. The appeals for peace addressed to Mussolini could only bring success if the statesmen in the opposite camp were conscious of their responsibility and if they showed goodwill. There was little time left now to save peace after many millions of soldiers were ready to march. If peace was to be preserved, the other side must recognize the vital needs of the peoples. The text of the letters exchanged between the Führer and the British Prime Minister Chamberlain will be published on Tuesday after the British reply has been handed to the Führer by the British Ambassador Sir Neville Henderson, it is stated in London. It is officially announced that the House of Commons will meet again on Tuesday in order to hear a statement by Mr. Chamberlain. No fresh meeting of the cabinet has yet been fixed. The meeting on Monday noon lasted 50 minutes only, after which Sir Neville left for Berlin. The House of Lords will meet on Tuesday afternoon. The British government has published a white paper containing a number of security measures for the country, shipping and aviation. Further measures deal with anti-espionage. No British subject may enter hostile territory, ships or airplanes without official permission. Travelers reaching England may be searched. The plunge taken by the English pound seems to know no bounds. According to today's quotation, the pound has dropped more than 10% in the past 3 days. The gold price rose at the same time from 148 to 161 shillings per ounce. All British-owned foreign stocks must be declared to the Bank of England according to a new government regulation. British ships have been instructed by the British Admiralty not to pass through the Mediterranean until further notice. All British ships have been recalled from the Baltic. The Rhine frontier between Germany and France was closed on the French side on Monday, states a Paris report. The last train crossed the Rhine bridge near Kiel on Monday morning. Press, film and radio are now being censored throughout France and the colonies. With a view to defending and preserving neutrality, Holland has mobilized her army and navy today. It is stated in Amsterdam that all traffic on the Netherlands railways is to be closed down from Tuesday morning until Tuesday afternoon. The Dutch bank rate has been increased from 2 to 3%. The Belgian cabinet considered on Monday the precautionary measures hitherto adopted in view of the international situation. Afterwards, the British and French ambassadors were received by the Belgian Prime Minister Pierre Loup. The Swiss Federal Council decided on Monday to call up the Swiss frontier forces for Tuesday morning at 5 a.m. The Danish Foreign Minister, Dr. Munch, said in an interview given the Reuters agency that Denmark is determined to retain a neutrality under all circumstances. He hoped that Denmark would be able to keep up her trade with Germany as well as with Great Britain. Agricultural Minister Tupits of Estonia declared in Reval that Estonia feels reassured since the signing of the German-Soviet-Russian non-aggression pact. The Irish press also shows a strong will for neutrality. The papers, however, do not comment on Britain's attitude and express the hope that peace can still be saved. The Swiss, Dutch, and Belgian papers praise the generosity of the German neutrality statement. The submarine built for Turkish account at the Krupp Germania shipyard was launched at Istanbul today, in the presence of representatives of the Turkish naval authorities. This is the fourth and last submarine built in Germany for Turkey. On the occasion of the 25th anniversary of the Battle of Tannenberg, the Führer has honored deserving ex-soldiers by granting them a special allowance and promoting a number of non-commissioned officers. The former colonial troops were also included in these grants. General Nobuyuki Abe is reported to have been entrusted with the formation of the new Japanese cabinet in Tokyo. General Abe has not been very prominent in politics in the past. Up to 1936, he was a member of the Supreme Japanese War Council. In view of the international situation, the Egyptian Cabinet Council has decreed a number of emergency measures. All stocks of vital commodities are to be registered, and the dissemination of military news is strictly prohibited. Egyptian and British vessels may only leave with the special consent of the War Office. This is Berlin calling via stations PJB and DJD on the 19 and 25 meter bands. Our first news bulletin in English has been concluded.